Sunny, breezy, high 70 today. Lauren Rainson, WMBD meteorologist, says we're going to have beautiful weather for the next couple of days. Clear, low 50 tonight, sunny, high 72. Thursday, 75 on Friday. The same for Saturday, 60 right now. I'm Susan Saunders. On Wednesdays, we learn about money in words that mean a lot to you. From Kevin Kingston, John Rudy of Kingston Wealth Management. Are we still over 23,000?
You know, I didn't look this morning, but we were... If not, we're
23,130 at the moment.
Okay.
So, I was going to comment, Susan, good morning, you will probably be here today when that 23,000 barrier is exceeded. It touched on it yesterday, but it closed under 23,000.
Yeah. It's
historically high.
It really is, Susan, and I think what it kind of talks about is kind of a theme that we've been talking about for many, many shows right now, and that is that this economy, for a lot of reasons, is still moving forward. There's a lot of faith, not only here in this country, but as my son Chris and I were talking about this morning, Kevin, there's a lot of commerce, a lot of sales of products from the U.S. that are being bought, purchased internationally. And I think it's one of the reasons why we're seeing corporate profits and things of that nature doing so well.
Exports, you're referring to, have been very favorable.
Yeah.
U.S. exports.
So I think the theme, again, has been very positive. I think we try to caution people, though, and I think it's, Kevin, I think you guys do this all the time, is putting things into perspective. It's troublesome for me personally to hear any president or anybody, for that matter, whether the stock market's up or down, to take too much credit or to get too much blame. I think markets a lot of times are pretty efficient, and they're going to do what they're going to do. Now, you can make the argument that they've created right now this basis because of some deregulation, because of some of the tax structures that they're trying to get across. I think there's a lot of built-in euphoria into the markets, but I hesitate for people to count on that forever.
I think that's over-touted, John. When you look at the earnings of companies and the profits of U.S. companies, I really believe personally that more of the gains are related to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, there's definitely an anticipation that we're going to see tax reform. A lot of things that the Trump administration has completed are very pro-business. You know, when you look at shale production, oil production, that they've really enhanced, and some of the things that have happened economically, all those are very positive. And you look at those fundamentals, and they really support what markets are doing, regardless of tax reform.
And have you done the I told you so dance to anybody that called you at 21,000 when that was the historic high and said, oh, the bubble's coming, I got to get out, and look where we're at today?
Well, we don't do that celebration dance, but you look at these markets and you look at downturns, and I just go back to, you cannot predict those things, John, good or bad.
Yeah.
And so when somebody's trying to make decisions on what they think is going to happen, it's really a bad idea.
Yeah, and we go back over and over and over again, and I think over the time that we've done this show, I think people have seen enough to recognize, Kevin, that strategy, that thinking is what I think separates companies that do it like we do versus others. And there's story after story that kind of illustrates the problems when you start getting too cute in this business. Kevin, you and I were remarking on the way over about a story that was in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, talking about Wells Fargo having to pay $3.4 million over an advisor flub. And I want you to talk a little bit about that, because I think it kind of puts it into perspective from some of the things we've talked about with the new rule that's going to be coming out.
Well, the fiduciary rule that you're referring to that partially went into effect in June, John, really addresses some of these things where brokers or someone just trading securities, like what happened at Wells Fargo, they're really not held to that standard. I mean, those kind of trades are very much commission driven, and they have a duty to put best interests in place, but it's not the fiduciary standard of what we were talking about, Susan, a few months ago, and it's now in effect as of June partially. When you're working with a registered investment advisory firm that's fee-based. They're held to the fiduciary standard on all accounts, whether they're retirement accounts or non-IRA accounts. What John's referring to is this news on Wells Fargo was fined by FINRA because their brokers were trading a product, John, that's really meant as a short-term trade. They were selling it as a long-term holding.
Exchange-traded products.
So they could make more fees.
Well, the thing about it is, and I think, you know, FINRA, I mean, they basically came down and said that, you know, these short-term items do not belong in a long-term retirement strategy. And so we point that out as sort of one of the things. But, you know, and that comes on the heels that this isn't the first time. I mean, 2012, they had a $2 million fine. Things happen. In our business, you can make mistakes, but you can't make recommendations, I believe, Kevin, I think you believe that just don't fit the client's
business
interests.
Well, that's where we really support that fiduciary rule, John, and where someone at Wells Fargo or the brokerage houses may be held to that standard now on IRAs. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily held to it when it comes to non-IRA accounts. And we think it just makes a difference. If you're working with a registered investment advisor, whether it's our firm or someone else, and they're held to that fiduciary standard, these kind of things shouldn't happen.
Now, remind me, what was the fine again? It was how much?
$3.4 million this time.
For things that happened a couple of years ago. So it was...
Well, no, this is fairly recent. They were fined back in 2012 on another issue.
I know the headline just came out, but I thought the crime technically was committed.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the date...
Not a crime.
The mistake.
Yeah, between July 2010 and May 2012.
I didn't read the entire article. My question is a generic one. When someone is caught doing something that's not to FINRA standards, it's kind of like a tax audit, you know, where they go back through and say, hey, you didn't do this right, sort of, kind of, but not. Is that a punishment that they will actually feel? I mean, nobody likes writing a $3 million oops check, but same time, when these banks are so large, is that truly a punishment?
For Wells Fargo, it's gone on the heels of their $1 billion charges over the other investments.
Right. And I mean, when you add it, I think your point, Susan, is as a company that large clearly can absorb that kind of a hit. It's not one of those things where if you took a small mom and pop company and hit them with a $3.4 million judgment, you got real issues. I mean, these guys, they're generating a lot of income. So, but I think what it does is it raises the attention and I think the awareness to folks out there that you got to make sure when you're dealing with those retirement dollars that you're making certain you're not investing in something that A, you don't understand, and B, that just doesn't make sense in a retirement portfolio. And I think that's the thing Chris and Mike stress all the time. Hey, a couple other things too, Susan, that I wanted to hit on that were in the news. Retail purchases rose in the past month, and I think it just continues to illustrate that Americans have a fairly good grasp on their confidence, and I think it's manifesting itself into some sales at the retail counters,
and it's also the month of Halloween.
It is, and it's huge.
That's second only to the Christmas month. You're absolutely right. When it comes to spending, now
you're absolutely right, and I think it's just, you know, my wife and I were out for dinner last night at Distill in Champaign. Great restaurant, by the way. But I think Matt Potts has done a brilliant job of what he's done. But anyway, we were having dinner last night, and we were commenting on a Tuesday night how packed the place was. And you thought, you know, that just kind of, you just keep looking at situations like that, and you see people are spending money. They're out there doing it. And
are there any nights downtown Champaign where it isn't packed?
No, there isn't. It's packed every night. That's why I'm still working. I spend too much money down there. But I do think it's a great thing right now that we're going to see, I believe, a fairly robust, unless things change, Christmas holiday buying season, and I think that could bode well.
Tell me what you think about the Social Security rise.
Yeah.
Is that causing any consumer confidence?
You know what? I'm glad you asked that question because it's on my list of things to talk about. But I think for folks who sort of read, it looks like there's going to be a 2% increase, Kevin, in Social Security. I don't know that from a dollar standpoint it's going to be that. Maybe $25 a month is on average.
Some of it, unfortunately, is going to be consumed by the
Medicare
part of Social Security.
But I think what it does is that at least it lets folks know that they're getting something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's that positive feeling that, hey, at least we're not going backwards.
Exactly.
We're maybe keeping up with inflation to some extent.
And it helps offset some of that medical increase.
No question. Mm-hmm. So I think anytime you get an increase, you know, you can't look at it as meaningless. But, look, we've said before and we'll say it again, if you are out there trying to make retirement on just Social Security, folks who are out there doing that and listening today know what I'm talking about. That's not an easy deal.
No.
And I think that's why, Kevin, you spend so much time talking about, and we had this come up yesterday. We were doing a TV interview, and the couple that were interviewing us were saying, should we be starting now? I mean, should we be getting going? And of course, the answer is, you know, Susan, as astute as you are, yes. You need to start right away.
You should have started at birth.
Yeah. And so it just, Social Security is a tough game if you're trying to do it on its own. And it's just not going to be a good outcome for many, many people if that's all they're looking at.
John, I also wanted to comment. Congress has raised the top marginal tax rate four times since 1950,
mm-hmm.
and in 2013, they raised the top tax rate on individuals to 39.6 from 35. So when we talk about this tax reform, I think the most important part of it is it would reduce the corporate tax, and you'd see money come back in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at these personal tax rates.
Yeah.
40% is the highest marginal rate. There's not a lot of Americans that pay anywhere near 40% of their total tax. But when you look at that individual tax rate, it's just like confiscating almost half of your money. I mean, there's something wrong with that picture.
It's punishment for succeeding.
Well, and now you couple that with, you're in a state like New York or California, where now maybe your state taxes are double digit, or New Jersey. And now you add that on top. You add all the other ancillary taxes that you're paying along the way. It makes it awfully difficult at the end of the year to really say, what am I working? Who am I working for? And so I think it is. And by the way, while we're talking about states, we're not at the bottom. I can proudly report Illinois is not at the bottom. We're 49th. We're the 49th worst state is when it comes to fiscal responsibility. New Jersey they've got number one.
But
I think we were talking a week or so ago. It's Puerto Rico, not a state. But
yeah,
Puerto Rico.
Right.
New Jersey and Illinois.
California right all there. Kind of in the same lump, yeah.
This is Kevin Kingston and John Ritty from Kingston Wealth Management. We're going to be back with more market details and part two and three of our conversation today. Understanding inherited IRAs is important information for you to know, and managing risk of your retirement portfolio with diversification strategies. And that's a word that I could not pronounce that easily when we started together on the show, and now I say it all the time. We'll be back with more after this in WJBC.
This is the voice of Central Illinois, WJBC and WJBC.com.
Hey, don't forget, tonight is the night to get to the Western Tap, 5 to 6 o'clock every 5 minutes. We're drawing out a name to give them pairs of tickets and tailgate passes for the Saturday's ISU homecoming game, ISU versus South Dakota. While you're at the Western Tap on Western Avenue, $9 buckets of Coors Light. Look forward to all the food on Saturday from Hy-Vee with the chicken wing buffet. And maybe you'll stick around long enough to watch that baseball game a couple of people care about tonight, which is at 8 o'clock with the Dodgers versus the Cubs. Being near alcohol tonight during that ballgame might be a happy thing. It's 10:25. I'm Susan Saunders with John Rooney and Kevin Kingston from Kingston Wealth Management. We were talking about the record-breaking high on the Dow, retail purchases rising, Social Security. Any movement in interest rates that we need to talk about?
Really not a lot, Kevin. The 10 years, you know, hasn't fluctuated all that much.
2.3 this morning.
Yeah, it's been 2.3, 2.5. I think
that's rate of return.
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue right now with yield.
Yield, excuse me.
I think what is the president has been meeting with Yellen and making a determination that, A, you know, is she going to be possibly reappointed, or will there be somebody else? I'm not sure what's going to happen yet. But on the interest rate front, not a lot of big changes. And same with oil, Susan. We'll just touch on that briefly. Kevin, I didn't see what the price per barrel, but it's been hovering in that 50 range.
52 today.
Yeah. So it's up a little bit. But once again, the MIG story is good.
Just going back for...
And you're Go ahead. You're seeing a little bit of rise in oil, John, on Middle East tensions,
yeah.
and then, of course, U.S. policy shift towards
yeah.
Iran. Those things are having an impact. You are seeing that barrel price rise slightly. The thing that's helped offset that is OPEC has been somewhat successful at capping production. But I did have a couple things I wanted to mention. U.S. shale producers usually step up. You know, when they see these prices get better, then you see more shale producers mm-hmm. step in. The other thing I saw is there's 743 rigs drilling in the U.S. currently, and that's down about five. So, you know, there's just a lot of activity there that's affecting that price. January of this year, we have short memories. The barrel price was $56.
Yep.
June of this year, we saw the barrel price as low as 44. Now we're back to almost, not quite, 52,
yep.
almost
yep.
where we started the year.
We're still in pretty good range.
Now, the barrel price per barrel, does that affect our home heating oil prices as well?
Well, this is crude oil.
Crude oil.
Natural
yeah.
gas is more on the on that side of the equation. And I haven't seen what the forecast is, Kevin, for this winter.
I have not either.
You know, last winter we were very fortunate here in the Midwest. We had a pretty mild winter. And I think even around the country things were...
Oh, I have a forecast.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Are we going to be good?
I have a forecast. Thank you to the Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah.
Yes. And actually, they're predicting for the 2017-2018 winter for our part of the country, mild and wet. So that's where I was trying to forecast in heating oil prices.
Yeah.
My parents rely on heating oil.
I don't think there's going to be any drastic swings from what I'm understanding, at least, you know, nationally. It's a big cost for folks in the wintertime in the Midwest. There's no question about that.
The question I just want to go back to
yeah.
real quick is I don't remember when it went from Bernanke to Janet Yellen as the chairman of the Fed. Does that take a congressional confirmation?
I believe that's correct. Sure. I think the president can appoint, but
appoints.
But I think it is confirmed.
But it is.
Confirmed. I believe it has to. I don't. Don't quote me on that. But
I keep thinking that's why Janet might keep her position longer because he's got kind of a waiting list for confirmation.
Yeah, he's mentioned Cohen as a possible, which I really like him a lot. I think he would be very good. But I think time will tell. I think we'll know here real soon.
Does that mean Janet then stays on the committee and is no longer the chair, or she retires?
I would imagine. I think they usually go.
She would be passed.
Yeah, passed.
Yeah.
She may be sort of a ex officio where you're maybe help, you know, maybe for a period of time, but not very much. You're not really, Kevin Cheng has said no.
No.
Gone. Out.
Yeah.
No contact.
Past chairman.
But
yeah.
Wouldn't that be a great reference to have on your resume if you were going to then open up your own advisory company?
Well, most
company
of
after
yeah,
that?
I mean, you look at probably all those folks that spend some time in the government. You know, they usually walk out of there with a pretty good gig after. There is life after politics, no question.
Still to come with John Rudy and Kevin Kingston of Kingston Wealth Management. By the way, we have to enjoy their education this week because you will not be with us next
no.
week. Because you will be re-education time
yes,
through
Valmark
Securities.
Yep.
So we will miss you next week. Still to come, understanding inherited IRAs, managing retirement risk, and I think we should go over again, John, while you're in studio, after the news, more details about the Entrepreneurs
yes,
Dinner
absolutely.
That is right around the corner, and I do believe you can still get tickets.
You sure can.
Sold
yep,
out yet.
Nope, we've got room.
We'll talk more after we go through headlines, which start now at the WJBC News Desk.
At the top and the bottom of the hour.
There's an acronym for everything in money structures. And if you don't remember IRA, that's Individual Retirement Account. And sometimes people in their states give you one. They've passed away, and there's money left over in the account, and you inherit one, and that's our topic here. How do we do that,
well,
John Rudy?
You're right. I think that does come up a lot. And, Kevin, there's a lot of questions that you, Mike, Chris Field, with Inherited IRAs. I wanted to spend just a few minutes talking about some of the main things, but it kind of goes back down to first question, who was the original owner? And I think you have to sort of kind of parse through that.
When I would start with John, inherited IRAs are a terrific asset to inherit,
mm-hmm. yep.
really, but then the rules are very complex. So the beware caution is really look at what you need to do, be careful how you make those elections if you inherit an IRA. But first and foremost, you can roll over a late spouse's IRA into your own,
mm-hmm.
or you can treat it as an inherited IRA. Usually, someone's electing it to roll it over into their own IRA. If the original owner was not your spouse, You must treat the IRA for which you're named as an inherited IRA. There's no choice to just roll it into your own.
Right, and I think that's an important distinction, Kevin. One of the things that I think people look at, we talk about, you know, whether it's a traditional IRA funded with pre-tax or a Roth IRA funded with post-tax, that comes into equation because it can occur in either, correct? I mean, an inherited IRA can come from either way.
Yes, and the rules are a little different, mm-hmm. John. As you know, Roth IRA doesn't have any required minimum distributions where traditional IRA does.
Mm-hmm. You know, Kevin, one of the things I think you I've seen come into play with this is whether those folks who inherit that, is it a strategy to let that money grow, or are some of them want to just kind of cash it in and take it out?
Unfortunately, many times people want to just want their money. And I'll just use an example. You inherit $100,000 in an IRA, and you tell the custodian or the advisor, just have them send me a check. Well, the thing that you need to ask about, what's the tax look like, because it'll hit your tax return. It's on top of any other taxable income mm-hmm. you have, so you can get hit very hard.
So suddenly it's my salary plus $100,000.
Correct.
And so now I am in that 40% tax bracket.
That's correct. And that's where the inherited IRA advantage comes in. You do not have to take it in a lump sum. You can schedule the required minimum distribution, John. You must take that. If it's an inherited IRA, you must take the RMD. But, for example, a 30-year-old, 40-year-old, mm-hmm. that's based on their life expectancy, so then the RMD can be a very small amount.
Right, which is,
so as opposed to paying tax on $100,000, you know, maybe you're paying tax on just a few thousand or less each year.
Could I choose to split that? Let's say you do have some debt. Could you choose to say, well, I'll take 50
in
cash and 50 in rollover?
Well,
you could treat it as an inherited IRA and then just take a larger distribution.
But okay. You're going to
so
pay.
So I want more than the RMD. Please send me a check for $10,000 rather than just a few thousand.
Right. There could be some tax implications. It could put you in a higher tax bracket potentially.
It's all taxable when you elect it.
It's always taxable.
Right. Kevin, when you inherit, you become the secondary beneficiary, then you, you're saying you assume that required minimum distribution schedule
right.
of the person who was a primary. And I think that's what I think when you explain it to folks that they understand, because I think this is going back a few years, but I think you had a client that had really misinterpreted and had made a mistake or was given some bad advice. But you have to treat these things very carefully because they're great, but if you have to pay a big tax on
it. Generally speaking, once that election is made, it's made and you can't reverse it. So that's where if you don't seek financial advice for anything else, this is one area you really should seek some advice.
Well
said. Because it doesn't roll over into one giant IRA, then you still have individual accounts. Still to come with Kevin Kingston, John Rudy of Kingston Wealth Management, who you can discover more about at KingstonWealthManagement.com, managing retirement risk with a diversification strategy. Those are big words, but when the experts explain it, you'll understand more after this.
The voice of the Illinois State
Sorry, I blame the drugs. The website for Kingston Wealth Management, I gave it .com, it's .net. KingstonWealthManagement.net. And you might want to make an appointment quick before these two are in Florida for a week for re-education.
Yeah, but actually, I think Mike is going to go to Dayton this time, so he's going to stay back. So if anybody needs to get a hold of somebody next week, we'll have folks in the office. Absolutely.
Good to know. I'm managing retirement risk with diversification strategy.
You know, years ago, and I think it's becoming more fashionable, Kevin, and we're going to kind of talk a little about a version of that, but there used to be this so-called bucket system, which kind of apportioned assets out into maybe three distinct buckets, and thinking about tiers,
buckets,
which is
tiers.
But it was it was an idea that sort of, you know, headed off what your costs are today, what they are kind of in the mid range, and then retirement. Talk a little bit about why you think you can.
We actually use it a lot, John. Really consistently with good financial planning. You know, you think in terms of tier one or bucket one. It's
right.
Really cash in the bank for income. If you had no income for 6 months to a year, you should have that mm-hmm. much in bank cash, plus any major purchases or anything you know that you're going to have a major expense for. So that's tier one or bucket one. That second tier is really more for intermediate term. So you think short, intermediate, long term. That intermediate can be for I need to accumulate the down payment for a home purchase. or I'm headed into retirement, or I'm in retirement, I want a few years of income mm-hmm. in that second tier. So if I'm 65 and retiring, I try to accumulate enough money in that second tier where I can let my 401k or IRA grow until 70 and a half when I'm required to take it. So that second tier can really be invested. It doesn't just need to be in bank cash typically.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for a home down payment, that really should be in bucket one, unless you're trying to accumulate over a 3 or 5 year period, then you could use tier two for that as well.
Kevin, let me just throw a scenario out there. Let's say you go through you're in a period where the markets are down and you're needing some income, and if you've got that bucket one where there's some readily available cash that you don't have to go and interrupt those long-term deals. So let's say then you take it one step further. Now, all of a sudden, we're in a good market situation, and bucket three starts getting real full. Then you can replenish back, can't you? You can actually put some of that back into fill bucket one again.
You could do some rearranging mm-hmm. of those assets, and the whole goal is I want that cash reserve so
right.
I don't have to touch investments.
There you go.
I want that second tier so I don't have to touch 401k IRA
mm-hmm.
until the required minimum distribution age of 70 and a half. The other key factor, John, to that second tier for somebody in retirement or approaching retirement, it may help you maximize Social Security. So as opposed to taking normal retirement at age 66 or early retirement mm-hmm. at 62, we've talked a lot about if you can delay that Social Security benefit.
Get that bump.
Every year you can delay it, there's an increase in that benefit of about 8%. So if you can delay it until age 70, for example, or at least close to it, by having that second tier or second bucket, it's a huge advantage.
That's a great point. And I think the other thing, too, Susan, is, you know, there's – I think too many times people have been conditioned as they get to a certain age that it's now time to revert into something just one-dimensional. I've got to get real conservative. I've got to get liquid. But that can be a real problem, can't it?
Well, and you see news articles talking about, okay, you're age 65 and retiring, or 62 and you're retiring. You need to be real conservative with all your assets.
Mm-hmm.
That's an absolute mm-hmm. misnomer.
Yeah.
It's really a mistake in a way, particularly when you look at longevity today and those retirement assets in 401k, IRA.
Mm-hmm.
For someone to go real conservative, it's probably not going to work. You know, you need to at least replace the inflation rate, that 2-3% return is needed just to keep pace with inflation. And then ideally, that long-term tier three, bucket three, has a bigger return for growth.
Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds, you know, pretty simple. But the strategy, sometimes people outthink themselves and they try to get too esoteric in their thinking. And so I think this is a concept, whether you call it tiering or a bucket strategy, that really hits some of those points.
And again, John, if you can really focus on that long-term retirement income plan, financial plan, it removes a lot of fear.
Yes.
I think a lot of that where people play into, I need to go conservative with my retirement account in retirement or approaching retirement, is fear. I don't want to go backwards.
Right.
I can't afford to go backwards. But it's actually the reverse of that. You really can't afford to not have those assets grow.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is it keeps you from potentially making that knee-jerk reaction in a down market. You know, we were talking about 1987 last week, I think, when, you know, the history of the crash. And I think if you've got monies apportioned to deal with issues like that, it might prevent you from making that knee-jerk reaction of saying, uh-oh, I got a problem here. I think that's what you guys try to head off.
These are questions that I'm sure you could ask over cocktails of Kevin Kingston and John Rudy, who you will both see at the Entrepreneur of the Year dinner. Well, coffee too, I'm sure will be served, since John Rudy was on the committee and helping pick out the amazing location for food and more at the DoubleTree this year. Tell us how we can get tickets for this upcoming event.
You know, Terry Noel, who's working with us from Illinois State, I think one of the ways is contacting him at his email at terrynoel.illinoisstate.edu, I believe, is his address. And also, they can call our office at 663-9477. We can make sure you get added on the list. It's going to be a great evening. Bob and Julie Dobsky are very deserving winners. And I think everybody who's heard that they're going to be honored this year as the Entrepreneurs of the Year could be very well deserving.
And the Alumni Award winner,
Katie Hill Gotsman.
Mm-hmm. Terrific company, Commuter Ads.
So it's going to be a great event, and I know you guys have been very supportive, as has been so many in town. And so it'll be a fun evening.
Thursday, November 2nd.
Yeah, and the proceeds, it's $100 a ticket, but the meal's going to be fantastic. And then all the proceeds go to the program to support this entrepreneurial program at Illinois State University through the Mean Center. So,
what was your favorite part of the event last year, Kevin?
You know, to me, the event's really all about the students.
Yeah.
If you have any desire to meet and interact with Illinois State College of Business students, it's just a phenomenal opportunity, I think, John.
Yeah.
I run into a few of them since that dinner. I've really become friends with one or two that I've gotten better acquainted with. So I think that's the real upside, is connecting with students.
The kids got a lot out of it, too. They, sitting at the tables with the people from the business community and people in your industry, and they were like sponges, and so it's a great event.
It's easy to find out more. The Entrepreneur of the Year Awards Recognition Dinner. Sorry, that's only hard for me to say because I got a cold in my nose. But we'll talk more about it as we get closer to the event here on WJBC.
Securities offered through Valmark Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Valmark Advisors, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. Kingston Financial Group, Incorporated is a separate entity of Valmark Securities, Inc. and Valmark Advisors, Inc., and past performance does not guarantee future results.